attention, please.
Say it again. May I have your attention?
May I have your attention?
May I have your attention, please?
Shabbat shalom, everyone.
Shabbat shalom, everyone.
Shabbat shalom.
My name is Son of Yeshua Obadiah Hawkins, and I'd like to serve you forever as a priest. I'm very soon. It's now time to start finding your seat for Sabbath services.
May I have your attention, please? Shabbat shalom, everyone. My name is Sonny Yeshua Abiyab Hawkins, and I'd like to serve forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and an honor to present to you the sons and daughters of Yeshua Abiyab and now to the sanctuary. I'd like to turn to Sonny Yeshua Abiyab Yedea Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. You may be seated. The title of my speech is Authority. Many years ago, when Yeshua was still on earth, he spent a lot of time teaching. But when did he start teaching? As young as 12. Please turn to Luke 2:46-47, found on page 783. Finally, after 3 days, they found him in the sacred precincts, sitting in the midst of the doctors, teachers of the law of Yahweh, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and answers. The chief priests and the elders of the people did not like Yeshua. They came asking him all these questions because they did not understand who gave Yeshua authority to teach. In the first book of Israel, chapter 11, verses 39-41. And when he came into the sacred precincts, the chief priests and the elders of the people came to him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing this? Where are your credentials that we were supposed to have given you?" Yeshua said, "Your credentials mean nothing to me. Where do I get my authority? You answer me something, and then I will answer you something. I have authority that comes from Yahweh." Deuteronomy is where Yahweh told us what to do if we want to have a part in Yahweh's kingdom. The world does not understand because they need a teacher with authority to teach them. In every era of the house of Yahweh, he has given authority to one set by Yahweh. Yahweh gave Abel, the first righteous priest, the authority to be the priest, and in these last days, he has given authority to Yahweh's one, to his one sit, Yisrael Hawkins, to teach and preach his message. Please turn to Yochanan 6:29, found on page 821. Yeshua answered and said to them, This is the work of Yahweh, that you believe in him whom he has sent. It is our job to believe the one sent, to know his authority comes from Yahweh, and to obey him and all the authorities in the house of Yahweh, in the house of Yahweh. If we do this, we are submitting to Yahweh's authority, and we will make it into Yahweh's kingdom. May I bless your understanding, and if you all please stand. I would now like to turn over to the future priest for prayer.
For our figure day, I'll turn the services over to Deacon David Knighton.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. Please be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Today, we've got a great lineup of sermons for you. Quite a bit of variety. We're going to start out with a man that this will be his first time speaking at the podium. That's Deacon Benaiah, and he's been in the house of Yahweh for 25 years. We're going to continue on with Deacon Onaiah. He's been in the house of Yahweh for 9 years. And all these men have come from very different places around the globe, in fact. Then we're going to go to Deacon Emmanuel. He's been in the house of Yahweh for 12 years. And then Deacon Anthothea. He's been in the house of Yahweh for 30 years. And we're going to finish up with Kohan David Heimerman Hawkins. And he's been in the house of Yahweh for 32 years. And the thing that these men have in common is they've been learning peace. They've been learning the laws of Yahweh, learning how to conduct themselves, learning the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program. In fact, just to give you a little taste of what we're going to be doing in workshop lessons today, the workshop lessons will be focusing on the second book of Israel and, of course, your book of Yahweh. And the subject is coming to unity in these last days in agreement with the every word of Yahweh. That's a sermon that was on 5:28-93. You're going to be covering pages 200 through 204. And some of the high points are Yahweh hears those who are in agreement with him. Also, another high point that you'll be focusing on, and hopefully you can keep these in your mind and be thinking on them throughout the day in preparation for this. Another point is Yahweh says he can actually take the lowest one to confound the wise and do the work of Yahweh through them, which we're going to see some miraculous things take place. You saw a young man come up here this morning with the first announcement. I thought that was pretty miraculous, too. He did a really great job. Praise Yahweh. Now, another high point in the workshops will be coming into unity with one another and with Yahweh and letting the laws guide you instead of emotions. I wanted to share something with you on that point. Emotions are so strong. I mean, they push us, if we allow them, they push us into doing things. As we know that the influences that kind of control our emotions sometimes, the influences have the ability, they don't have to control you, but they have the ability to affect the way that you think, feel, and act. And you're either controlling your emotions or not. You know, it all begins with a thought. So we need to keep these emotions in mind, and it reminded me of something. I remember a man that was having a particularly hard time over a period of about a month or 2 months, and it was, I mean, really, he was in despair quite a few times, even to the point of just sitting down crying and not really knowing what to do. This man knew the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program, and he was trying to grasp hold of his emotions instead of his emotions grasping hold of him. He pulled out the character unit of the Peaceful Solution, and he flipped through there and he was looking at a few points that, you know, reminded him of how to control himself. And, of course, with his knowledge of the self-control book and so forth, it started coming together. And then he accidentally ended up on, you know, the last page in the book. Now, this page is after the glossary, after the bibliography, after everything. There is a very important jewel, and I may have mentioned this before, but there's a very important jewel that everybody needs to keep in mind. See, it's right here. I'm going to go ahead and show it to you on the overhead. It's right here, and it says, "Remember this." You see it? Remember this. This is on the very last page after everything. You wouldn't even think anything else was there. Okay? It says, "Remember this. Basing your decisions on facts, not emotions, is what builds true moral character. You are better able to make a perfect decision when you gather all the facts than a person who only has a portion of the facts." Now, you are better able to make a perfect decision. See? The emotions cloud your decision-making process. So basing your decisions on facts, not emotions, you are better able to make a perfect decision when you gather all the facts than someone just operating off emotion. So you got to get all the facts. Now, a few more points on that I'd like to mention is that in the second part of the workshops or towards the end, we'll be focusing on there is a tremendous amount of work that Yahweh shows you're going to do in the last days to usher in the kingdom and to raise the dead. And then also another point is the more you learn these laws, the more you see what they bring into your life. And that's the thing that these men have been learning and learning together. You know, many have been here a very long time and more of you, the whole congregation. There's some of you have been here extremely long time. Some of you just got here. And the main thing is that we remember that we're coming into unity with each other and with Yahweh and through Yahweh. We're not coming into unity with negative things being done. We're coming into unity with the positive things that are being done. Therefore, when that positivity, we all work together to bring that forth and be in unity, then we can truly accomplish all the great things Yahweh has set up for us. And these men have been working together to do that. I'd like to leave you with this thought that Yahweh has. We're having, you know, this is a tough time right now. The testing, the trials, the pressure, the thinking there's not enough time in the day to get everything done. You know, it's tough. But Yahweh's seeing what we're made of. And we have to remember, we have to keep our mind on the goal and think of the things that Yahweh has in store for us. The individuals in the world that have had portions of their subconscious mind open by maybe a major accident that they got hit in the head or something, and then they were able to do miraculous feats that nobody could even understand how they were able to do so. Most of the time, they were incapacitated in all other areas of their life, not being able to tie their shoe, not being able to feed themselves and so forth, but yet they had this one thing that they just excelled so much at, like playing the piano after hearing, you know, Mozart or something. They could just sit down and pound it out with no problem to perfection. Or the man that could, in the book, There Is Someone Out There, that talks about a little bit of this, and it's really an awesome book. And if you read that and see what Yahweh has in store for us, that not only would we be able to do that one thing, but we would be able to do many other things to that degree and even more. Just unbelievable things. And I think that's really an exciting thing for us to keep our mind on, is what's available to us. So when you think there's excitement out there through movies or entertainment of some type or music, keep in mind that Yahweh has something much more exciting for you. All you've got to do is come into unity with your brothers and sisters, with Yahweh, come into unity in righteousness and keeping the laws and treating each other properly, learning how to conduct ourselves and how to behave in Yahweh Shema. That's what we're doing right now, so we don't get in trouble there. And so let's work together to achieve this great goal. And with that, if you'll all please stand. It's my great honor and privilege to present to you the great Deacon Benaiah Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. Please be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Would you please turn over to Matithiah chapter 24 on page 752. We're going to look at verses 6 and 7. The name of my sermonette this morning is one word, tribe. Verse 6 in Matithiah 24 is, "And you will hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and pestilences, disease epidemics, and earthquakes in place after place." Most of my sermonette this morning will be off of this book by Sebastian Junger, and it's named Tribe, on homecoming and belonging. And that's where I'll take most of my this speech from. When he was in, he was a journalist, and he did a lot of writing and went to a lot of wars and everything, and he was in Afghanistan in the Gulf War. And when he was there, he was embedded with a platoon that was in the Afghanistan mountains. And he noticed that they formed rather close relationships with each other. And he noticed also that it was a very extremely harsh conditions that they lived in. And they were constantly fighting their enemies in the Afghanistan mountains. On his way home, he got to thinking about the similarities between the modern military and the Indians of the old, or the way they lived and their lifestyles. Going back to his book, he says, "We have a strong instinct to belong to small groups that are defined by clear purpose and understanding, tribes. This tribal connection has been largely lost in modern society. Regaining it may be the key to our psychological survival." From the American Heritage Dictionary, a tribe is a unit of social organization consisting of a number of groups who share a common ancestry, a culture, and leadership. An ancient political, ethnic, or ancestral division, any of the 12 divisions of ancient Israel. A group of people sharing an occupation, an interest, or habit. Back to Sebastian Books, he was talking about decades before the American Revolution, Benjamin Franklin lamented that English settlers were constantly fleeing over to the Indians, but the Indians almost never did the same. A surprising number of Americans, mostly men, wound up joining the Indian society rather than staying in their own. They emulated the Indians, they married them, were adopted by them, and sometimes even fought alongside them. The opposite almost never occurred. Indians almost never ran away to join a white society. Immigration always seemed to go from the civilized to the tribal. Another part of his book, he explains the Indians formed close relationships with each other. They would go to extremes to protect each other. And he found out that they also lived in semi-harsh conditions, in semi-immobile or semi-permanent encampments, and they believe that all people are equal and deserve equal rights and opportunities. Indian tribes were more or less run by consensus, and anyone who didn't like it was free to go elsewhere. Individual authority was earned rather than seized and imposed only on those who were willing to accept it, and the white prisoners became part of the tribe. Now, the modern combat veterans or the modern military is similar. The combat veterans form close relationships with each other. They often live in extremely harsh conditions. And they would give up their lives for their brothers and sisters in arms. The U.S. became industrialized around 1920, and they pushed west and south, and they started encroaching upon the Indians' lands. The European settlers continued to expand west and south, and they went from border to border, coast to coast, and eventually they joined up all of the Northern America, and they pushed all the Indians in, most of the Indians, into the reservations where they live now, and eventually became the United States that we know now. The Vietnam War was the first war where helicopters and heavy transports were used extensively to take the Marines into Army and Marines into battle. With the invention of the jet engines and these heavy transport aircraft, it made it possible for men from the, or soldiers from the United States to be flown into a war zone with all of their personal equipment and all of their clothing. They could do it in days rather than taking weeks and months like it would cost or like it would take if a person was on a ship. The heavy transport aircraft made it easier to replace the soldiers from military bases located in the United States and the surrounding countries. They can replace their soldiers in hours and days instead of weeks and months. Soldiers from the States that can arrive daily by plane with all their clothing and personal equipment. And the soldiers that leave the war zone can be home in hours and days instead of weeks and months. But for many combat veterans, there is often a conflicting desire to remain home with their loved ones or to go back to war. This has elements of the fact that it was often the best time and the worst time for them. It also had to do with a back there paradox that some veterans need to resolve. Many would gladly return to the war with their comrades, but why is it like this? If we really hate war, why would we do it again? It's not for the glory, because there isn't a lot of it, and it's not for money either, because nobody ever gets rich in the Army. The reasons that a service member may want to return to combat are more personal or other focused. They're focused on their brothers and sisters. It doesn't mean we love our it doesn't mean that we don't love our families. It doesn't mean we have a death wish. It just has to do with the values we developed when we were in the service. The reason the soldier on the ground fights is not for country or political reasons. It's for the people in front of him, to the left of him, to the right of him, and the people behind him. The memories of our brothers and sisters are usually the heaviest and most long-lasting. I made it back. They didn't. I made it back because they saved my life. We were a team. We had a bond. We did something important together. Many veterans go back to combat with their brothers and sisters they served with, called and said, "Hey, we need you." They would go back in a heartbeat. The demands of combat on human mind and body are extraordinary. Humans like functioning at an extraordinary level. They love it. It's very hard to find a job in the States that requires the vet to function to the level that combat requires. The stakes are life and death. In other words, they're the highest stakes possible. All these things produce a cocktail of pleasurable endorphins and hormones in the bloodstream. All these things really feel great to the human brain. So it's very, very hard to find a job in the civilian world that requires that same feeling or produces it. Modern society has almost completely eliminated trauma and violence from everyday life. So anyone who suffers these things is in a bad way. A combat vet is swallowed up in a society that sees them as victims, but just simply leaves them to fend for themselves. The loss of closeness that comes at the end of a deployment may help explain the high rates of post-traumatic stress disorder suffered by the military veterans today. PTSD develops after a very stressful, frightening, or distressing event, or after a prolonged traumatic experience. Things like serious road accidents, violent personal assaults, terrorist attacks, disasters, and combat can lead to PTSD. And the symptoms are, they may relieve the ordeal through thoughts and memories, having flashbacks, hallucinations, and nightmares. They may feel distress on the anniversary of the date the trauma occurred. May avoid places and people and thoughts or situations that remind him or her of the trauma. This can lead to feelings of detachment and isolation from family and friends, as well as loss of interest in activities that the person once enjoyed. They may have increased excessive emotions, problems relating to others, hard to show feelings or affections, difficulty falling or staying asleep, irritability, outbursts of anger, difficulty concentrating and being jumpy or easily startled. May also suffer physical symptoms, increased blood pressure, heart rate, rapid breathing, muscle tension, nausea, and diarrhea. They may also have negative cognitions and mood. This refers to thoughts and feelings related to blame, estrangement, and memories of the traumatic event. They may have hypervigilance, means they constantly scan the surrounding area that they're in. 70% of all adults in the United States had a traumatic event. 20% get PTSD. And 5%, or about 13 million, have it at any given time. 11% of Afghanistan veterans have it. 10% of Gulf War veterans have it. And 31% of Vietnam veterans have it. And there is no cure. Between 2008 and 2016, more than 6,000 veterans committed suicide. In 2016, 69.4% of veteran suicides were with firearms. In 2016, the suicide rates for veterans aged 18 to 34 increased substantially from 40.4 deaths per 100,000 populations to 45 suicide deaths per 100,000 populations. The U.S. population is approximately 325.7 million people. So that would put the suicide deaths over 3,000 a year. Suicide rates for women veterans went up 1.8%. The suicide rates for 35 years old through 75 years old and older stayed the same. Suicides went up for veterans who recently used VA care. But there is a group of people who live in the U.S. that are living in peace, a tribe, a house of peace in a world full of turmoil. What is it about this small group of people that sets them apart from the world full of hate and war? The people of the House of Yahweh live peacefully with each other for years and years and continue to set an example for the rest of the world to follow, but the world will not take hold of the peace. If you turn to Ephesians 6:11 on page 920, we have the answer to peaceful living, and we'll give it to the whole world for free. Most of the leaders ignore the written and verbal pleas to stop these wars, to stop the hate. We're fighting a battle with Satan every day. So on page 920, Ephesians 6:11, it says, put on the whole armor of Yahweh that you may be able to stand against the wiles, the crafty ways, the schemes of the devil. There's only one place in the world that has lasting peace, a place where everyone is loved unconditionally and returns it unconditionally. If you turn to Yochanan 13:35 on page 831, and you can look in your note, for your notes, you can see 1 Corinthians 13:4-13, but at Yochanan 13, verse 35, it says, by this will all know that you are my disciples, by the love you have for one another. There is an open invitation to all who want to live with people that are honest, reliable, kind, and caring. You want peace? Come here. You want to learn the laws of Yahweh? Come here. You want to live a righteous life with righteous people? Come here. Want peace forever and ever with love? Definitely come to the House of Yahweh. And if everyone will please stand. Turn it over to the great Deacon Oniah.
Thank you very much. Hey, Shabbat Shalom, good House of Yahweh. Y'all may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every last one of you. The title of my sermonette today is, it's a long title. So, believing to the one sent and obey, coming out of the rain and receive Yahweh's protection through these righteous examples. And we'll go through some of the time allowed. We'll go through some of the examples that Yahweh, through our great teacher Israel Harkin, has given us. I'd like to thank our great teacher, Israel Hawkins, for allowing me to speak to the great called out ones this morning. It's a great honor and privilege to be before you all. So, brothers and sisters, our great teacher, Israel Hawkins, has proven over and over to not only us, but to the whole world what Yahweh's prophets of this generation were started in what year? What year did this generation start? Thank y'all very much, 1934. So, great saints of Yahweh, we're going to continue on the theme of believing into the one, seeing and obeying. So, because we had the rain earlier, for right now, for the time I've been down in Texas, this is the most rain that I've seen in this area. So that's kind of why I kind of added that into the speech. But also, it was for another reason, too, which we'll get into that. So we're coming out of the rain. Remember, we are told in Deuteronomy chapter 28. So if you have your book of Yahweh, can you please turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 28? That's found on page 170 of the book of Yahweh. And we're going to go over verse 24. This is also what we've been told about rain. That the rain would be powder and dust, right? So Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 24. Yahweh shall make the rain of your land powder and dust. But it's not going to be Yahweh that's going to make it, right? You know, it's going to be Yahweh will allow mankind to bring forth this rain, which is called industrial waste, right? Because we're trying to scratch out the nuclear bomb, but industrial waste. So from the heavens above, it's going to be in a short time now, you know, with the movement of the embassy, we know it's going to be a short time that's going to occur. So that rain that will be part of dust, referring to radioactive fallout from all of the industrial weapons, the nuclear bombs that will be detonated. So what's one of the tools that will keep rain off of us? What's one of the tools that we use that keep rain off of us? Louder, please. Umbrella, yes. You was correct. So I Google search umbrella, and you'll be surprised in the definition of the word umbrella, how closely related to, well, we won't be surprised, but, you know, most people be surprised because it's never coincident with us. So in the second definition of the word umbrella, you have the word a protection force or an influence. So we are very familiar with that, right? A protecting force or an influence, which in the book of Yahweh, you know, in the Peaceful Solution Care Education Program, we are very familiar with the word influence and what it pertains to. So the definition protector, to keep safe from harm or injury. Now the definition of the word force is strength or energy as a attribute or physical action or a movement. So if you please turn over to Psalm 91, found on page 470 with that in mind. Found on page 470. Okay, and for time's sake, we're going to rehearse. For time's sake, we're going to rehearse verses 1 and 2. So, verse 1. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High will abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Now, if you... So, if you look over to side note B says the protected place. This is what we can see today. We can see that going on right here today, that those who have been here in the house of Yahweh, those who have came, the ones who just came, the ones who are coming, you know, you can see that during the feast days and through the classes, the new moon, which we just had the opportunity to celebrate, Second Samuel moon, the night new moon. You know, these constant rehearsing over and over again of the what our great teacher Israel Hawkins is teaching us is the protection. It'll draw us from the harm and the danger that we come out of. We once was in all this danger, you know. So Yahweh has made a way for us to come out in these last days. So this is what we can see today: a protecting force that keeps us safe from harm or injury through Yahweh's strength. So what is Yahweh's strength? Yes, the law, Yahweh's law, 613 laws and prophecies. And y'all helping me out a lot on that. Thank y'all very much. So force and energy as an attribute of physical action or a movement. So the house of Yahweh is this action. With this knowledge, let's focus on what's going to help us to come in out of the rain with this umbrella and receive Yahweh's protection. So please turn over to page 455. Page 455. And we're going to be looking at Psalm 55. And we're going to be rehearsing in Psalm 55, verses 12 and 13. So page 455, Psalm 55, verses 12 and 13. For it is not an enemy who reproaches us. For we could bear that. It's not one who hates us, who has magnified himself against us, for we would hide ourselves from him or her. Verse 13. But it was you, and this you is a man, a boy, a girl. It could be dad or mom. It could be your brother or your sister. It could be a peer. It could be a classmate or a fellow worker. It could be your cousin, your family, or a so-called friend, or our associate that we're using these days, and the word acquaintance, right? That's what we're using. That's what that could be. These are the people that could, if you allow them to, you know, they will pull you out of Yahweh's work. And the example Yahweh is going to show us later on as I get to it is what we need to stand upon to strengthen ourselves in Yahweh's house, right, in order for us to endure what we have to endure in the last 3.5 years that's going to be cut short. So our great teacher, Yisrael Harkin, has been teaching us in the entire world for over 50 years now, the prophecies proves this last generation, you know, that and this last generation may be cut short. And we know through the prophecies and what we've been rehearsing that time is very near. With the moving of the embassy, we know that time is very near. So great saints of Yahweh, Pastor has given us through our great father Yahweh and Yahshua, our great high priest, example after example of how to remain obedient and receive Yahweh's protection. Because without being obedient, you won't receive Yahweh's protection. So to be one of the strongest of the strong, like one of the deacons in the speech earlier, not today, but he said it some time ago, as being one of the strongest of the strong in Yahweh's house. So please turn over to page 882. That'll be Romans chapter 12. And we have more verses to rehearse in that in Romans. So Romans chapter 12 on page 882. All righty. 882. So, chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, I appeal to you, brothers, by the mercies of Yahweh, that you present your bodies as living sacrifices, holy, acceptable to Yahweh, which is your reasonable service. This is Yisrael Harkin pleading to us every day of how we should be conducting ourselves in Yahweh's house. And do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may be able to test and prove what is the righteous and acceptable, perfect will of Yahweh. So what is the right and acceptable way, perfect will of Yahweh? What is that? It's keeping Yahweh's laws. It's rehearsing, right? It's the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program, right? You know, that we are all practicing and rehearsing right now that teaches us how to be humble, how to be respectful toward one another, how to have care and consideration and esteeming and lifting up one another, right? If we are willing to practice that, the peaceful solution, you know, we could learn to love Yahweh's laws. And we'll be able to always be at peace with one another, you know, at all times of the day. One of the priests last night talked about Yahweh Shemal in law class. I think that was a very great law class last night too. Both priests did a great job of rehearsing what Pastor's been teaching us. And they mentioned about Yahweh Shemal, right? And how we're training right now to interact in Yahweh Shemal, you know? How important it is that we understand that our training right now and what we're doing today, right now today, on this great Sabbath day, is how we're going to be doing on the Sabbath in Yahweh Shemal. You know, so if we choose to bring forth within our thoughts negative and foolish interactions, then you're going to be doing that in Yahweh Shemal. And you're going to be found out. You know, so we don't want, you know, the second priest says something that very, very great, and it kind of gave me a great lift, and I thank Yahweh for it. You know, he encouraged us that the Yisrael Hawkins and the priests who Yahweh have ordained to be in the positions that they are, the priests and the priestesses, you know, they don't want to see none of us fail, right? They don't want to see none of us not enter into that kingdom. They don't want to see none of us being told, brother, how did you get in here without your holy garment? The holy garment is your character. The holy garment is, okay, these are holy garments, yes. But being humble, being obedient, your character, that's the holy garment. That's what you have to get into Yahweh Shemal with. Bring that forward. And we can start that today. So let's go over to verse 9. Love without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Shun that which is evil. You know, don't fall into what's evil, you know. Cling to what is righteous. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly or sisterly love. In honor, showing deference or respect, honor to one another. Not slothful in business, but fervent in spirit, serving Yahweh. Rejoicing in hope, preserving through tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer. Continuing to the needs of saints, given to hospitality. That means being respectful to one another, being kind and considerate to one another. I think the greatest hospitality is, like Pastor said, being in the food service. If you could be in the food service to where you get the opportunity to say to your brothers and sisters, how may I serve you? That's like the greatest thing that you could do. You know, always reinforcing that, how may I serve you? And then rejoice in eating your meal, you know. So those are very great examples that we could use in uplifting one another on the Sabbath day, the new moons, and on the feast days. So great saints of Yahweh, if we take these great examples and practice them, building up one another, we will remain obedient and receive Yahweh's protection in Yahweh's house forever. So I'd like to thank the great priest of Yahweh. I'd like to thank our great teacher and overseer, Yisrael Ava Hawkins, for this great opportunity to come before the great called out ones. And may Yahweh bless each and every one of our understanding. Now may you all please stand. I'd like to introduce a great friend of mine in Yahweh's house. He's a great deacon in Yahweh's house. And actually, I would like to thank him because he encouraged me to come up and start giving speeches through him coming up and giving speeches. The great deacon, Emmanuel Martin Hawkins.
All right, praise Yahweh. All right, you may be seated. All right, may the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Are we getting our lessons in? Praise Yahweh. We're learning everything we need to learn. The title of my speech today is going to say, Are You at War with Yahweh? And with that title in mind, we're going to go through some scriptures that are very, very familiar, okay? But I want you to just to keep in mind, are you at war with Yahweh? Okay, for the first scripture, we're going to turn over to Zechariah chapter 6 And I want people to notice this, okay? I want you to notice the high priest in verse 1, okay? Of course, we got a high priest. Verse 12, speak to him and say, this is what Yahweh of hosts says. Behold, the man whose name is the branch, for he will branch out from his place and he will build the house of Yahweh. Yes, he will build the house of Yahweh. He will bear glory and he will sit and he will rule on his throne. He will be a priest upon his throne and the council of peace will be between them both. Now, both. I got some pictures here I want to show you here. Tell me what you think. Does that qualify? No? Okay. Oh, become a better you. How about this one right here? No? And I'm not trying to make fun here. What I'm saying is that we have a high priest working with somebody here. Okay? Here's another one. How about that? No, that's right. You know, right? Okay. So what we need to understand is what Pastor is doing with building here. Okay. We must remember that we have a dress code. We have a dress code here. Does anybody want to take a guess at what that dress code is? White garment of humility. We have to be humble here, okay? We have to be humble. We have got to put ourselves down. I mean, all the way down, completely down. Because chapter 5, verse 11 says that he's bringing that standard and perfection to us. Us. Okay. To build a little bit more on this, let's go to Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 5. Again, I know these are some very familiar scriptures, but it's very beneficial for us to rehearse these things, okay? All right. Oh, man, I left my copy. Oh, here it is. Here's my copy right here. Okay, it says, behold, the days come, says Yahweh. So we have our Father talking to us right here, okay? I will raise to David a righteous branch. And a king will reign and succeed and will execute judgment and justice on the earth. So you see here, Yahweh is saying to us that Pastor and Yahshua is not going to fail in building this character within us. Because this is what we're talking about here. We're building a character. Remember Genesis 1:26 says, I will make man in my likeness and in my image. That's right. So we are in this place right here, in this university, to become just that way, to be able to handle situations the exact same way that Pastor Yahshua and Yahweh does. We need to respond the exact same way in order to get this authority that we are created for. This authority that we're created for is, wow, when you really think about the power that Yahweh has to be able to make things thousands or thousands of years ago and then conform it right here to a Strong's concordance. And then say, you will have that ability also. You know, we're going to have that same ability too. So, what ways can you be at war with Yahweh? What ways? Let's take a look at a few here. Okay. One, it can be when you get upset at a decision he has made concerning something. Not getting your own way. Let's take notice of this last one here. Pay attention to the red. He came down on you. He came down hard on you about something that you did to save your life because you did something without permission. We get into a lot of trouble in this, and I'm going to be the first one. I do too. I become, oh man, dang, did that without asking. Shoot. Remember that reproofs of instructions are the way to life. And when we remember that, when in the house of Yahweh, we're going to have some tough skin. You have to develop tough skin, because if you wear your heart on your sleeves, somebody is going to really upset you. And then you're going to go trotting down the road, forgetting what you're here for. Exodus 20:20 says, perfect vision says, I have come here to test you, to see if you're going to be able to respond the way that I respond to things. If you're going to have the same outlook on things that I have, this is what it's all about. Okay? This is something that's very, very important. And pastor does not do one thing for somebody that he wouldn't do for another. And I'd like to share something with you about that, okay? In an effort to get close to pastor, to talk to him and just see how he does things, just to be up close to him, I wrote him a letter one time. And I said, Pastor, I introduced myself. I was the one that came out of Kazakhstan, and I worked in the press room. And, you know, I would like to know if you can see your way clear to allow me to be a part of your family, in your immediate family. And I gave him my number, and I gave him my counselor's numbers also. And his response was, anybody want to take a guess what his response would be? What was that? Yep. He said, there's no difference. There is no difference. So I took that and I said to myself, okay, so I can expect the same thing that he would do for his biological for somebody who came because of his teaching. And that really helps because, we're going to go into it, as a matter of fact. We're going to go into it here in a couple seconds. Let me just do it like this. When you and me reject what pastor has taught us, we reject Yahweh. Remember the title, okay? Remember our title. That's 1 Samuel 8:6. When we don't agree with pastor, we don't agree with Yahweh. How can two walk together unless they are in agreement? That is something that we really need to keep our minds focused on. If we're not in agreement with what pastor is doing, not in agreement with Yahweh, that's war. That's war. Remember, the council of peace is between Yahshua Messiah and pastor. Okay, notice the bold here, okay, everybody? If we are not at peace with all that pastor does and teaches, then we are not at peace with Yahweh and Yahshua. Please notice that. Please, because it's vital to the salvation. If you have some type of a disagreement, or something concerning pastor, it's not going to take place. It's not going to be great for you. Okay, let's go to Isaiah chapter 11, 2 through 5. And this is a scripture that I take a lot of comfort in because, of course, I was having some problems. You know, I had some problems and stuff like that. And pastor sets people in office. And the people who Yahweh pastor sits in office really helps. Okay, and let me just digress here just for a couple of seconds. See, I was having some problems with certain individuals. And to be honest with you, okay? And I went to the counselors and everything. And for 8 years, I've done what the counselors told me to do, right? Did that. But I didn't realize what it was doing to me by not letting it go and not dealing with it. And let me tell you, let me just read to you what he told me, okay? Just to digress here just for a couple of seconds. It says, you have to focus on the end goal and not let temporary tests and trials affect you. Yahweh wants to see how you will respond to it, and Satan wants to see that it bothers you. Okay? Yeah. We all have at least one person who tries to push our buttons according to each of us. Remember, Proverbs says, Yahweh tests the minds of men. If ever we are in a disagreement, even if it's with someone in authority, and this person he has some authority, or not in authority, the fact that we allow it to affect us both mentally and physically, and that's the part that I didn't realize. I figured to myself, I'm doing the counseling and everything like that, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but it was still bothering me mentally and physically. That shows that I still have something to work on, it says. and that has nothing to do with somebody else. So what I that was the part right there that really just like, oh man, shoot. So what I had to do was think about this and say, okay, this has nothing to do with the individual that I'm having a problem with. It's really not a problem. It's really an opportunity for me to see this character that pastor is trying to build on and not to be at war here. So it says, as it says, it has nothing to do with the individual and what we are doing in our personal lives to change that. So what I had to do after I read this here, I had to go and sit down with my counselors and say, okay, I need a plan of action here. I got to see what I got to do to fix this because I don't want to live that way because this is bothering me. And I really find out now that it is bothering me. So with the point that I was trying to make here is sometimes we use our emotions and the emotions get in the way of us seeing. It's just like this. Or you can do it like this too because you don't see the big picture. And that's what hurts. Now, getting back to Isaiah chapter 11, verse 2 and 5, I want everybody to realize pastor is 100% correct in everything he does. And if you don't believe that, there's a problem right there because he's not doing anything just for himself or just one individual group of people. It's prophesied. It's prophesied that he is going to be a righteous judge. And we're going to read it right here. You got that? Says, verse 2, says, the Spirit of Yahweh will rest upon him, and the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, and the Spirit of knowledge and the reverence of Yahweh. Wrote a book of Israel about that one. So you can take comfort right here that that pastor is not going to do something just for the benefit of himself or just biological children. Or not. And this right here, I take a lot of comfort in because I'm going to get a fair shake. This is prophecy saying, when I come to the counselors, when I have something that has to come to pastor, I'm going to get a fair shake because this is what he said he's going to do. It says here in verse 3, which will make him of quick understanding, and his delight will be in the reverence of Yahweh. He will not judge after the sight of his eyes, nor will he reprove after the hearing of his ears. Verse 4, look at that. But with righteousness, he will judge the poor and reprove with equality for the meek of the earth. He will smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips, he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be the belt of his waist, and faithfulness will be the belt of his loins. Exactly what he's teaching us. This is exactly what he is teaching us, okay? You have to realize that this character is right here. Righteous character, righteous responses is what he's talking about. Let's see. Look at this. His goal is to train us to get into the kingdom. Let's really pay attention to this, you know? Really look at this. You know what I like about the house of Yahweh? Let me tell you. I like the house of Yahweh because the answers are here. There is no answers anywhere else. The pictures that I just showed you, they don't have any answers. No answers. The answers are here. Pastor's goal is to train us to get into the kingdom. Obeying him should be our number one goal. Number one. We shouldn't have our minds focused on anything else. It really shouldn't be. Our mind should be focusing on that Genesis 1:26, making sure that every test that comes around, that we are alert to it, and then we can adjust ourselves according to what Yahweh is trying to show us. If Yahweh is trying to show us that we need to get a little bit more tougher skin, because you know what? When we get the caravan coming in here and we get that all taken care of, do you think it's going to be any different than what we're going on right now? No. What about when we get out into the universe? Are we going to have anything different from what we're going on now? No, it's still going to be people trying to overcome. Notice right here. Notice this red part right here, okay? It says, expressing your own thoughts and opinions is not showing wisdom. That's not showing wisdom, okay? expressing yourself. If you think, if you're underneath a supervisor and you think you can do it better than your supervisor, I learned that. Don't do it. You're walking down the wrong area right now. Nope. That's true. That's real. If you think you can do it better than your supervisor, let's take, hey, you know what? Maybe you can. Maybe you can do it better than your supervisor. But you know what? That supervisor is there because maybe he needs a little work and he needs to be put there so he can develop what you already have. You see? So understand that, okay? Just kind of closing right here right quick. Let's go to Yochanan chapter 13, 20, okay? This right here takes away, this scripture right here takes away everything. There's no room to buck up because if you look at this, it says, truly, truly. That means you can take this to the bank and you can cash it right there. I say to you, he who receives whomever I send receives me. Point blank, there's no wiggle room right there. None. And he who receives me also receives whom I sent. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. He who receives me also receives him whom I sent. Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay? So you have no wiggle room right there. You have no wiggle room. Take a look at that, okay? Receives. Look at how that's receives in gold right there. It's in gold. Right? Revelation 20:16. I, Yahshua, have sent my mallet to testify to you these things in the congregations of the house of Yahweh. I am the root and offspring of David and the bright and morning star. Please, if you're at war, repent, humble down, and get to your counselors and understand that this is not the right way and get a plan of action so you can go ahead and get it done. So we can enter that kingdom together because we need you. Pastor needs you. And if you all please stand. Praise Yahweh, brothers. All right. I'd like to introduce the next speaker, the great Deacon Antithea Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, great saints. You may be seated. We got quite a bit to cover. We see how far we will get with the message today. May the peace of Yah be with each and every one of you. Thinking back on my early school years, I remember many things taught by my teacher that were not part of the regular curriculum. It was those teaching that influenced my thinking. Many of them still guide my actions today. Anyone know what I'm reading? It's a peaceful solution. It's an all a peaceful solution. It's a preface. The preface gives us an aim, a scope of what is going to be covered in that particular lesson or throughout that lesson. I remember very early in my childhood, even before my school years, things my parents taught me that actually guided my interaction with others. One statement that I heard more than once from my father in the face of some frustrating events was, "Son, two wrongs do not make a right." Had my father's words not been mentioned in my hearing, but rather more damaging words such as, "Get even," "Fight back," "I'll never forgive you for that. I will never forgive you for that." I'll get you for that. I may have treated others differently. In my lifetime, I have seen many people retaliate, children, adults, and nations. However, I have never seen peace brought by someone doing wrong to another after that person did wrong to him or her. Teachers greatly influence our future leaders. Teachers greatly influence our future leaders. Each and every one of us sitting in this room, listening abroad, is given this opportunity to be a teacher. Yahweh has set a man here in Abilene to guide us, to instruct us of what and how to go about in learning, what to teach. Learn what to teach, then you can teach what you have learned. Teachers greatly influence our future leaders. This means teachers have a major impact on the outcome of the world's future. Just as few words placed in a person's mind at the proper time can actually guide that person's thinking for the rest of his or her life. Just a few words at the proper time. Remember that Proverbs, apple and a son of gold? They can last with you forever, a lifetime. A morally sound, wise, caring teacher can help 1, 10, or 10,000 students in their way to becoming morally sound, wise, caring adults. Everyone needs direction, but the early teen years are those where children actually seek directions primarily from those outside the home. Children actually seek direction. Most children during these years feel that they know everything that their parents and their parents know, that their parents know. Therefore, they will listen more closely to those outside the home, thinking they will learn things that their parents don't know. This stage is therefore set because the teacher is exalted in their mind as the one having the answer. Hence, we dedicate these books to all of us. I want to pay attention to this. The trust we place in you is the ultimate sacrifice. The trust that is placed in each and every one of us here, learning to be teachers, is the ultimate sacrifice. The career in the house of Yahweh is about life. We are fighting, we are striving, we are working, we are struggling. Everything you're going through, because Yahweh is fitting us in that shape, is for our life. This is not for some job, or just a mere job where you get a certificate and you hang it on a wall and you think you accomplished what you need to accomplish. This is a constant training, a constant work that Yahweh is doing. The inconvenience that you may feel, young man, young woman, your frustration, that is a tool used that Yahweh is allowing there, suggested a great deacon said, to build you into shape. Now, for the sake of time, please play the video.
Makes me happy.
You're making a difference in the world.
You are beautiful.
I brought them here to see the plant. I was like, a plant is getting bloomed. Like, it's not normal.
I think it's an excellent project to have something tangible that they can actually physically be a part of. Is, I think, going to be very powerful.
As the weeks passed, I started noticing that the one that was being bullied started kind of to droop.
While the plant that was being complimented, it was flourishing and beautiful.
It's raised the profile massively of different forms of bullying and the effects that bullying can have on people.
If it affects a plant, it can definitely affect other people.
If it can affect the plant, definitely could affect other people. Yahweh didn't say this job was going to be easy. And turn to page 493. But it's beautiful. You have to take your test as a beautiful trial. But if we don't go through it, if we don't allow ourselves to go through it, we'll prove ourselves unfit. Okay? I hope that demonstration will stick in your mind to see how important it is, how we treat each other, how we talk to each other. Psalms 144, I just want to read verse 12. So our sons may be like plants grown large in their youths. So our daughters may be like pillars. Pillars! How could it be like pillars if we're not building them up? If we're separating them? Who is better than who? Who has more power than who? We are family. We are one people. Only some are going to be pillars. What are the others going to be? Sculptures like those adorning the palace, a palace. Now, let's get into some of these things here. Criticize. I'm going to put the word criticize up here. Some of the meanings, which will sum rather quickly. Criticize. Find fault with, denounce, condemn, attack, rail against, pour scorn on, run down, mule, hammered, lay into, take apart, pull to pieces, pick holes in, trash, nitpick. We as the teachers, educators, and of course, these things can be useful. They can go both ways. They could be used as tool to build up and be firm with, or you could use them and tear down others too. The goal we want to get here is that we're making sure that we are encouraging and building and supporting each other up. And the young man, young woman, you have a part too, okay? You're not blameless in these things. You also have a part. Your part is to be obedient, to follow the instructions. That is your part. If you do your part, the others could go along doing their part as well too. You know, some of these things, the bullying, the trash talking, the nitpicking, you know, brothers and sisters, in training and teaching, it has to be done in increments. Okay, we're not going to be built in all in one day, in 1 hour. It's incremental. We can't force it all into someone at one time. In my first years in the house of Yahweh, I wasn't interested in anything scriptural or trying to learn and read the scripture. I didn't know what milk and meat was or honey was in the scripture. Had no clue about those things. I enjoyed the work. I did. It took a long time for me to really start again focusing the scriptures and really want to learn the scripture and develop a desire to learn the scripture. I didn't just want to read it too. I wanted to try to understand what I was reading, but I was so ashamed and frustrated because I couldn't understand what I was reading. I pushed it aside. I wanted to do other things. Maybe some of you might feel that way. We have to work with each other, okay? We are all we got. You know, it's funny, the antonym of criticize is this. See the word? It's another word in all the Peace and Solution books, right? Praise. Praise. Praise is to build up. It's to build each other up. Pastor saying the 10th book of Israel, part 2. And that attitude, Satan tries to put into mankind. So you will start criticizing. Did you ever notice how you are prone to criticize instead of bless? Did you ever notice that? It's easy to point at somebody else's fault or shortcomings instead of bless. Remember, in this sermon, Pastor was giving this right before he was talking about Netanyahu, and he was talking about how the man was taught to only use objection. Right, he was taught to only use objection and not how to bless. We here learn how to bless, not to nitpick on every little thing. Yahweh even winks at our ignorance. But by no means will we go unpunished if we continue in that ignorance, right? So we have a part to play too. Continuing here, it says, but think now of a beginner in this work, someone who is coming into this work. And that person, and that's the reason you've got to have patience with people on their first time to get here or to get in here for the first time. You have to be patient. Use some discernment, discreet, how we're dealing with them, right? because they don't know everything yet, and they could be easily offended. And like the great deacon was just saying, it takes a lot of, you have to have some tough skin. A lot of people come here might just be thinking, is this another church? Have no clue. This is a way of life. If the house of Yahweh is not a way of life to us, we might think the same way too. Is this another church? If something offends me, I can run and go the opposite way. But no, this has to be a way of life. Okay? Continuing here in 2 Kefa 2:9, you don't have to turn there. Just paraphrasing from what Pastor was saying too. Yahweh doesn't punish anyone. He let them correct themselves. Right there. Zoom in. Now, does that mean you don't need a teacher? Does that mean you can just go on and figure out through the universe how to correct yourself? No. But we ultimately have to work out our own salvation. We could merely put the choices before us. We have to make those decisions on where to go. In the Mark of the Beast, part 2, it said, being forced to obey Yahweh's laws would not prove that any forced man or woman would continue without sinning if the opportunity to commit sin arose and the force to obey Yahweh was stopped. We all must prove ourselves to Yahweh before we'll be given the enormous power Yahweh has intended for his children and his family to have. The main purpose Yahweh has for those whom he calls out is to prove that person, to try him or her to see if he or she will be totally righteous, or whether that pressure exerted by Satan, the pressure exerted by Satan, will make them turn against Yahweh. Yahweh's proven once was first tactically, he used tactics, okay, shown in the book of Exodus after Yahweh had delivered the children of Israel out of Egypt. Yahweh gave his Sabbath day, you remember this, to his people. Then he gave them bread from heaven in order to prove them to see if they would in fact merely restrain. Restrain. We have to learn that as the tool of a leader, having that restraint, having tolerance. Merely restrain from gathering it on the Sabbath day. He allowed us to merely receive the restraint from doing that on the Sabbath day. That word restrain is a stop. You know, have control, have self-control. All these things we are learning. I want to urge everyone, encourage everyone, all of us here, to take heed of Yahweh's teaching. And when our great pastor and overseer come out and he's teaching us, that we take heed to it. That word urge means to earnestly or persistently to persuade someone to do something. It's love, brothers and sisters. It's caring. It's a deep desire to see everyone overcome. Like I said before, it's done in incremental. It's increments. In small but productive steps. Little at a time. But remember, we don't have much time. Okay? Time is short. We can start this. We can start this now. And we will continue in doing this. Cleansing. Getting the stupidity out. This is what Yahweh wants. He wants to see us become perfect by the effort we put forth. In the speech manual, the attack speech is lesson number 8. I want to read that real quick. Lesson number 8. It said, don't argue, be sarcastic, plead, cajole, ask question, offer solution, or proffer apologies, but bombard, assault, charge, and issue. Next line down here, it said, do not attack personalities or people. We are learning how to develop these skills, brothers and sisters, in the house of Yahweh. We should know how to attack a problem without making that person feel they're idiot. They have no value. They have no worth. They shouldn't be here. Why are you here? Looking each other up and down, sideways, left and right? We got to stop this. Satan convinced the human mind through influence over it that breaking the laws of Yahweh is better than obeying Yahweh's laws. Through deception, Satan accomplished her works. In the book of Ephesians, Charles showed that Satan takes advantage of us when we yield or give in to her influence of our own mind, feelings, or thoughts. Scripture shows the super being known as Satan holds influence over the human mind. Although it is virtually impossible for most people to understand, Satan does broadcast to the human mind continually, influencing and guiding mankind to go in the opposite way of the Holy Scripture that the Holy Scripture instructed. You see what we're up against? Not just flesh and blood, principalities and power. Let's use the ability that Yahweh has given us to create friends, to build each other up, helping each other out, doing our duties, our assignments, listening, and working harder with these young men and women so we could qualify too for that great opportunity in Yahweh's kingdom. Thank you for your time. At this time, if you all please stand. I now have the privilege and honor to turn over to the great Kohen, Kohen David Hammerman Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.
Yahweh's peace and blessings be with each and every one of you. You may be seated. I'd like to speak to you today, if I could get my first slide up there. The title of the sermon today is The Last 3.5 Years Treading Down the Holy City, Rome. And a subtitle, The Final Chapter of the Showdown in These Last Days, which is speaking of the 3.5 years here. And today's date, 2 Samuel. I'd like to move on to the first slide here. It says, this is from the 16th book of Yisrael, speaking of the showdown that's going on between Pastor and Pope Francis in these last days. What we see here is this showdown between the high and the mighty, who call themselves the great and the holy, and an Okie, raised in Oklahoma, trained in Oklahoma. Now, quite a comparison, Pastor says, but we're going to win the battle, we're going to win the race, and Yahweh shows us that. And this is from the same sermon that Pastor gave, verse 19, chapter 38. Remember that, Pope, and here he's directly addressing Pope Francis with this with these statements here. Remember that, Pope, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are because of the comments you're making, Vatican City is listening. That's the showdown, one of the showdowns that is coming. One of them is nuclear war. And who is going to come out on top? The other one is warning, the warning that's going out to the world. We are warning a lot of people, and a lot of people are leaving the Catholic Church, and that's part of the treading down that's going on in these at this time. And a lot of people are leaving the Catholic Church and Christianity. I don't know how many other religions they're leaving. Now, this is a picture from the House of Yahweh calendar, the 2014 calendar, and it shows Pope Francis on the lower right-hand corner there, and he's got his eye on Yahweh's Last Days witness, Yisrael Hawkins, in the upper left-hand corner there, and we see the title there, Yahweh's Kingdom versus Satan's Kingdom, and that's the showdown that's going on in this world at this time. Now, In Revelation chapter 11, and Revelation is the chapter that speaks about the two witnesses and many of the things that they would do. From the King James Version translation here, Revelation 11 verse 8, it reads, "And their dead bodies," and this is speaking of the two witnesses, "shall lie," and those words were added, "in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also Yeshua was crucified." Okay, so it doesn't specify what city is being spoken of there. Our mind flashes to, well, Yeshua died in Jerusalem, so that must be what it's speaking of. But looking at an accurate understanding of that verse on the bottom there, Revelation 11, verse 8, "And there, the two witnesses' dead bodies." Now, this is talking about their characters, what the Vatican is attempting to do in destroying the characters, the reputation of the two witnesses, trying to speak against them as individuals rather than what they teach, the laws of Yahweh. Opposition comes from the streets of that great city, Rome. Speaking of Rome here, and it identifies Rome as a city when it says, is called Sodom. The Pope Francis has not spoken against, come out against sodomy. He talks around it. He talks in psychological terms. But he has not come out against sodomy. He's not in opposition to sodomy. And Egypt, the obelisk in Vatican Square, Egypt. And this city, Rome, is responsible for the death of Yeshua. Pontius Pilate was the Roman governor who approved, authorized Yeshua's execution. Now, in Revelation chapter 17, verse 1, and there came one of the seven Malachim who had the seven bowls and talked with me, saying, and now the only one of the Malachim, these seven Malachim that are active in preaching the message to all the world, is the seventh Malach, Yisrael Hawkins. Come, I, Yisrael Hawkins, the seventh Malach, will show you. He's going to show all the world the sentence of the great whore that sits upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication. That means they've practiced idolatry. They've practiced God worship. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet. This identifies the College of Cardinals. The cardinals, if you notice the pictures, they have these very vivid red robes, and so they're dressed in scarlet and red and purple. Now, from the 17th book of Yeshua, from Revelation 17, verse 9, continuing here, and here is the mind that has wisdom. The seven hill heads are seven mountains, the seven hills of Rome. It clearly identifies a city in the world today on which this woman sits. And there are seven kings. Now, this is identifying these kings are popes. They are popes. They're called popes. The scripture here describes them as kings. And notice here in verse 10, it says, five have fallen, five popes have died. In other words, since the Lateran Treaty of 1929. So this is a time snapshot in time right here. This is a time period this is describing. And that time period specifically is like from 1980 to 1983. The specific time when the House of Yahweh was established where? Not in Jerusalem, but in the chief of the nations, the United States of America. So five popes have fallen at this time since the Lateran Treaty of 1929, and one is or will be pope when the House of Yahweh was established. That was John Paul II. And the other has not yet come. When he, Pope Benedict, comes, he must continue for a short time. He continued as pope for 7.5 years approximately, and then he resigned. He cut his time short. He shortened his time. That's what this means, a short or shortened time. And the beast that was, now this brings us up to the present king, pope of the Catholic Church, the Pope Francis himself. And the beast that was and is not, indeed, he, Pope Francis, is the eighth king, the eighth pope since the Lateran Treaty of 29, and is one of the seven. He's of that, you know, he's in that office. And notice, this prophecy, he's going into perdition. In other words, he's going into destruction. He will be in office when the destruction comes, would be another way of putting that. So the popes of the Roman Catholic Church since 1929 Lateran Treaty. What's interesting about this is that if you look at this first pope, the Lateran Treaty of 29, Pius the 11th here, the first king, he was pope from February 22 to February 39. Now, who was born between those years? Well, Jacob, the first witness, or one of the two witnesses, was born in 26. Yisrael Hawkins, the other witness, born in 34. So king number one was Pope when the two witnesses were born. So that was the start of this generation. So all eight of these kings are part of this, were part, lived in this last generation. So the first five kings there, bringing us up to, let's go up to number six here. King number six, John Paul II. Now look at when he came into office, October 1978. And he was in office until April of 2005. And then king number seven, Benedict, he for about 7.5 years. And then in March of 2013, Francis, the son of perdition, was revealed. So now going on to this prophecy we just saw in verse 10 here of Revelation 17, this one is Pope when the house of Yahweh is established in the chief of the nations, John Paul II. He came into office in October of 78. Now notice this. I find this very interesting, and it shows you, gives you some insight into Satan's true character. In the fifth month, 1981, there was an assassination on John Paul II's life, an assassination attempt. He was shot like three times, but Yahweh did not permit him to die. You know, he had to continue living to fulfill his prophecy of this one is Pope when the house of Yahweh was established. Because 2 months after the assassination attempt, look what occurred. In July of 81, house of Yahweh granted official charter from the state of Texas. In 81, the 12th month, 1981, dedication of the first permanent sanctuary by the two witnesses. February of 83, House of Yahweh officially recognized by the IRS, House of Yahweh established. It's complete. And then he lived another 22 years and passed away in 2005. Now from Revelation 17, verse 15, and he said to me, the waters which you saw where the whore sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages. This is speaking of the whole world. It's speaking of the nations. It's speaking of the quartet that Vatican City, the sovereign name is the Holy See, and they obtained this sovereign nation status with the Lateran Treaty of 1929. They became recognized as a sovereign nation within the nation of Italy. Verse 16, and the ten horns, these are the ten kings which have been brought out here in by the house of Yahweh, showing us the ten Orthodox Christian, Orthodox Catholic kings. And the ten horns will eat her flesh in the end, and notice, burn her with fire. They're going to take away her office. Are they going to come against her in the end? Right now, the ten of them are cooperating with Pope Francis. And the woman whom you saw is that great city, Rome, which reigns over the kings of the earth. Why is it that whenever a president comes into office in the United States, you can pretty much know that within the next couple of months, he's going to go visit the Pope? And even President Putin goes to see the Pope, although I heard he was late he was an hour late for an appointment here recently, which sends the message. I mean, they probably had some friendly words, but nevertheless, being late for an hour for a meeting, that sends a message. So, but this woman reigns over the kings of the earth. Now, Pastor has, and we can look in the book of Revelation, Sarah, if you look at the note on the bottom there. Much of the book of Revelation is about the seventh era of the house of Yahweh and the Vatican, the priesthood that was moved to Rome. Now, in this next picture, this is from the Catholic calendar here a couple of years ago. You see Pope Francis. You see him standing. First of all, he's got a crown on his head. It's called a kippah. And if you look in the Book of Yahweh, where it talks about one way you can recognize this beastly system, is they have crowns on their head. And the Book of Yahweh says that means kippah. So he's wearing a kippah. And you look over his right hand there, is right above his fingers, the Egyptian obelisk, which came from Egypt. It's Pope Francis is addressing his faithful in the house of the sun god. This is sun god and worship. It's the worship of the gods in the house of the sun god. And the Christmas tree there above his right shoulder, this identifies who this system is speaking of in Revelation chapter 17. Now, Yeshua, in speaking to the woman in Samaria, he told her that Yahweh would not be the day was coming when Yahweh would not be worshipped in Jerusalem. And so here in Yochanan chapter 4, verse 19, the woman of Samaria said to Yeshua, "Man, I see that you are a prophet." Now, this Yeshua, in speaking to this woman, he told her about some of the things that in her life that led her to understand that this man was more just than some ordinary person, that he was a special person. She called him a prophet. He was a prophet of Yahweh, a teacher of the laws of Yahweh. In verse 20, the woman said, "Our fathers worshiped on this mountain, but you, Yadayim, say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship." And Yeshua gave her some information here. He said, "Woman, believe me, the hour comes when you will worship the Father neither in this mountain here in Samaria in the north, nor in Jerusalem." So this was a prophecy which Pastor explained to us here in the 12th book of Yisrael, part 1, chapter 22, verse 91. In Daniel 9:26 is this prophecy. "And after 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off." Yeshua was hung on the stake in approximately 33 AY. And so several years later, in 70 AY, this prophecy came to pass here. But, "And after 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off." That is, he's going to be killed, Pastor says, "without a successor. And the people of the prince that will come will destroy the city and the sanctuary." How did he know that? Look at that. This is proof Yahweh wrote this, inspired this. Yahweh inspired this to be written, Pastor says. If you know anything about history, you know that the sanctuary was destroyed by Titus, the Roman general. He destroyed what they called the temple at that time, about 70 AY. That was when this prophecy took place, destroyed the sanctuary. And as we've read many times in the newsletters, in the prophetic words, moved it to Rome, moved the artifacts to Rome, moved the priesthood to Rome in 70 AY. So continuing what Yeshua instructed this, was telling this woman that Yahweh will not be worshipped in Samaria or in Jerusalem, Isaiah 2:2. "It will come to pass in the last days that the mountain promotion of the house of Yahweh will be established in the chief of the nations." That's where it's moved to. That's where it will be established, the chief of the nations, the United States of America, "and will be raised above all congregations, and all nations will eventually be part of this work of Yahweh, will eventually flow to it. "And many people will go and say, 'Come and let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, the house of the father of Jacob, He will teach us his ways, the laws and the prophecies Yahweh's plan from the beginning to bring forth a righteous kingdom, and we will walk in his paths, for the law will depart from Zion. It's going to leave Zion. It's going to leave Jerusalem, Israel, and the word of Yahweh will depart from Jerusalem. Now, in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 1, "Now we plead with you, brothers, concerning the coming of our King Yeshua Messiah and the gathering of the gathering together to him, that you not be soon shaken in mind, nor be troubled." No, be confident, be peaceful, have that assurance that that this is the work of Yahweh, and this is where we need to be, neither by spirit nor by word nor by letter, as if from us, as that the day of Yahweh is at hand. It's very close. It's very close in these last days. The 3.5 years, the last chapter in Yahweh's plan for this age. "Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless there comes a falling away first, and that servant of sin is revealed." And the servant of sin has been revealed. That's the son of perdition, Pope Francis. He's in office right now. "Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God's." He claims to be Yeshua's replacement here on the earth, you know, representing God, "or that is worshipped, so that he, as the Almighty," notice, "he sits in the temple of Yahweh, showing himself that he is the Mighty One." So we're going to talk a little bit more about that, sitting in the temple of Yahweh, from the 17th book of Yisrael, chapter 37, verse 8. Pastor said, "In 70 AY, the four beasts made their move to Rome, took the temple to Rome, the artifacts and the temple and the priesthood. It's now called the Sistine Chapel. It's exactly the same measurements as the temple. Everything is the same. If it quacks, it must be a duck, right?" Well, it does. It quacks. Every measurement, even the Holy of Holies, is the same. I didn't even know it was the temple when I heard about it. Pastor says, "We saw it from the outside when we were in Rome at the so-called peace conference there. The peace conference was put on for show, but mostly to gather information, I think. But anyway, we witnessed to them. We wanted to go into this Sistine Chapel and do more witnessing, but it was closed for repairs." Well, I think at that time when Pastor's referring to here, that meeting in Rome, the Sistine Chapel, the ceiling was under repairs. They were cleaning the frescoes, cleaning the paintings that Michelangelo did in the 1500s, and that's why it was closed for repairs. Now, from the 17th book of Yisrael, chapter 39, verse 78, Pastor also said, "They're finally revealing the Sistine Chapel is the same as the temple that stood on the mount in Jerusalem. It's exactly the same size and the same stones. The Holy of Holies is the same. Everything is the exact same as the measurements given in Kings." They're saying it shows the ties between the Catholic Church and ancient Israel. They're admitting it, Pope Francis. Why don't you admit it? The Pharisees, your fathers, are the ones that moved the temple to Rome. The Pharisees, the children of those who murdered Yeshua, are the Pharisees, your fathers, are the ones that moved the temple to Rome. Now, this is an article I found on the internet. This is written by a rabbi, Yekatskil Lang, in 2017. It's titled, "The Secret Jewish Roots of the Vatican Sistine Chapel." And he writes, the motive for basing elements of the Sistine Chapel on Solomon's Temple is the replacement theory, which is basic Catholic doctrine, the rabbi told Breaking Israel News. They, the Vatican, believe they are the true descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And after Jesus, God rejected the Jews and chose them. So you see this replacement theory. You see where the pastor has shown us where they come from. And so you can see that there's some accuracy in what they think secretly. This article continues here. As part of this replacement theory, they wanted to replace Jerusalem with Rome. Replace Jerusalem with Rome. And so they sanctified, hence the words holy city, and so they sanctified Rome by appropriating elements from Jerusalem. Well, as we've seen, they stole confiscated articles from Jerusalem. They took what they wanted and burned the rest, but they appropriated elements from Jerusalem and took them to Rome. Now, this is, if you look at the editor's note there that came with this article, replacement theology, while present in some Catholic teaching, is not part of the Church's official views at this time. In 1965, Pope Paul VI published a church paper called Nuestra Ete, which was a seminal document disavowing many anti-Jewish aspects of Catholic doctrine. So they published this paper to kind of hide some of these anti-Jewish aspects of their doctrine. Now, the Sistine Chapel, this article here, this is from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. I love Wikipedia. It's a lot of information in it, and it's free. The Sistine Chapel is a chapel in the Apostolic Palace. Now, the Apostolic Palace is a group of buildings in Vatican City, which is considered the Pope's residency. It's much more than that, but they call it the Apostolic Palace. The Sistine Chapel is a chapel in the Apostolic Palace, the official residence of the Pope in Vatican City. The Sistine Chapel, originally known as Cappella Magna, the chapel takes its name from Pope Sixtus IV, who restored it between 1477 and 1480. And notice those years. What was occurring in the world in 1477, 1480, in that time period? Columbus was sailing the ocean blue, and what did he discover? The chief of the nations, you know, in 1492. So right around this time the chapel was built, Columbus, opened up America to colonization, which eventually led to the United States being established and the House of Yahweh being established in the chief of the nations. Since that time, the article continues here, the chapel has served as a place of both religious and functionary papal activity. Today, it is the site that the papal conclave, the process by which the new popes or the kings of the Catholic Church are selected. So those eight kings that I showed you on that list, they were selected by voting in the Sistine Chapel. The fame of the Sistine Chapel lies mainly in the frescoes, which are the paintings that decorate the interior, and most particularly the Sistine Chapel ceiling, and also the Last Judgment painting by Michelangelo. So this is a picture from Wikipedia. This is what the Sistine Chapel looked like when it was built in the 1500s. You can see that it looks quite a bit like the it looks like the temple. Doesn't have all of the outbuilding features, but the basic temple of Yahweh can be seen in this drawing from the, it's a 19th century drawing, so drawn in the 1800s, but it's a picture of what the Sistine Chapel looked like in the 15th century. And the text there on the slide on the right, it says the exterior of the Sistine Chapel. The chapel is a high 68 feet inside rectangular building for which absolute measurements are hard to ascertain, as available measurements are for the interior. It's easy to measure on the inside, more difficult on the outside. It's 134 feet long and 44 feet wide. The dimensions, notice, of the Temple of Solomon as given in the Old Testament. So it is the reconstruction of the temple that was in Jerusalem. Now this picture here gives you a modern day, current day picture of what the Sistine Chapel looks like. And if you see if my cursor is working here, this building right here is the Sistine Chapel. Looks a little different from that drawing, but it's the same building. You see and these other buildings around here are what was referred to as the Apostolic Palace, the residence, considered the residency of the Pope. Now, if you look at the text there, this is 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, and that servant of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, Pope Francis, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called gods or that is worshipped, so that he, as the Almighty, sits in the temple, temple of Yahweh, showing himself that he is the Mighty One, Elohim, God. When and if the temple in Jerusalem is rebuilt, he may upgrade the temple he's sitting at that time. But right now, he is fulfilling this prophecy also in that he sits in the temple of Yahweh, showing that he is the Mighty One. Now, here's a picture of the ceiling, or actually the interior of the Sistine Chapel. Sistine Chapel from the altar end. One I find very interesting here that they built an altar on one end. Now, this is not the altar of incense that was in the Holy of Holies, which you see lighting of the incense here at services today. The altar of incense was an incense altar, but the Sistine Chapel, they built an altar on one end, and there in that grating in the middle here, read an article that said there's seven of these rectangular partitions here. And representing the seven lamps of the menorah. And and the inside dimensions are the dimensions of the temple itself. So from the, but this, this the text on the right there, the second book of Yisrael Hawkins, he wrote about the Sistine Chapel back in the second book of Israel, where he said, Pastor said, in the 1500s, and specifically, the paintings were done, the frescoes were done by Michelangelo from 1508 to 1512. He worked 4 years doing these frescoes. In the 1500s, Pastor said, Michelangelo painted the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, and he painted Lucifer as a woman. As a woman. He painted Lucifer as she is described in the Holy Scriptures, as a serpent. When Michelangelo painted this ceiling, Pastor explains, history says Michelangelo bragged that the spirit beings, the demon spirit beings, if you would, were guiding him, putting visions in his mind, and showing these wonderful things that he displayed there. He painted Satan as a female. It was no secret. No secret. Now, from Revelation chapter 11, verse 1, and there was given me a reed like a measuring rod, and the Malach stood, saying, rise and measure the temple of Yahweh and also the altar and its confines where they worship within. So you see this. So I'd like to just fast forward to this. This is a prophecy that Pastor fulfilled, this Revelation 11, verse 1, in going to Jerusalem, going to Israel, measuring the temple, the property, getting the facts, researching this whole prophecy here given in verse 1. And then after the process was completed, this measuring the temple, model, the temple model, which is here in the sanctuary of the great house of Yahweh, was built after the chapters 40, Yekeskia, chapters 40 through 43. So Yahweh's last day's witness, Yisrael Hawkins, fulfilled this prophecy perfectly. And so you can see from the research that's been done, it's easy to identify the Sistine Chapel in Rome as that temple building itself. So going back here, actually, as long as I'm here, I'd like to read that. It says, Revelation 11, verse 1, "And there was given me a reed like a measuring rod, and the Malach stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple." And also, the peaceful solution was shown there. The fact that the Dome of the Rock did not have to be removed for the temple to be built without the inner court, without the outer court. So, you know, it showed the peaceful solution to that whole process of building the temple in Jerusalem and its confines where they worship within. But the court, which is outside the temple, leave it out. Just going to go back to this verse 2 here now. "But the court, which is outside the temple, leave it out, measure not, for it is given," or in other words, have power to the Gentiles. "And the holy city, Rome, they will tread underfoot for 3.5 years. I'd like to show you some of the treading that's going down on this today, that's occurring, as you know, with the work of the last witness in treading down the streets of Rome. In verse Revelation 3, verse 8, there on the bottom, speaking of this, the seventh heir of the house of Yahweh, "I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open book, and no man can shut it. For you, Yisrael Hawkins, the house of Yahweh, have a little strength. Have strength to fulfill all these prophecies written about this work." So going on to Revelation 11, verse 2, "But the court which is outside the temple, leave it out, measure it not, for it is given to the Gentiles. And the holy city, Rome, they will tread underfoot 3.5 years. We read at the start of this sermon about the showdown between Francis and Yisrael Hawkins. So tread underfoot. It's the Greek word here, 3961. It means to trample underfoot. And we also read earlier from the 16th book of Israel, there on the bottom of the slide, verse 19, Pastor says, "We are warning a lot of people, and a lot of people are leaving the Catholic Church." This is part of the treading being done by the house of Yahweh, Yahweh's last day's witness in these last days, leaving the Catholic Church and Christianity. Now, from the book of Revelation, chapter 2, "But the court which is outside the temple, leave it out, measure it not, for it is given to the Gentiles." Well, okay, Gentiles. Are we not considered Gentiles? If you ask somebody in Israel about this group in the United States, do we practice Judaism? No. Do we practice Christianity? No. But we are the house of Yahweh, the originals. We're the original. We came from Abel. But we could be considered, in the eyes of many people in the world, as Gentiles, a group of Gentiles. "The seventh heir of the house of Yahweh and the holy city, Rome, they will tread underfoot 3.5 years. This is a prophecy. And I will give my two witnesses to perform their prophetic offices, and they will foretell events about the 3.5 years, those cast about in darkness. There's plenty of darkness in the world. Just read the news. Just from day to day, the grinding darkness that comes across in the way people treat each other in this world at this time. These are, as it were, these witnesses, the two olive trees, and as it were, the two lamps of the 7-lamp lampstand, ministering for the Father in the earth. And this is a picture from the February 2011 Prophetic Word magazine, a picture of Yahweh's two witnesses, Jacob in the upper right-hand corner, born in 1926, passed away in 1991. And Yahweh's last day's witness, Yisrael Hawkins there in the center, born in 34. And so these are the faces of Yahweh's two witnesses spoken of in Revelation chapter 11. So these Gentiles that are treading down the holy city, Rome, the one that replaced Jerusalem as the holy city in the eyes of the priesthood that was moved there, Matthew 21, verse 42, Yeshua said to them, "Have you never read in the scriptures the stone which the builders rejected?" He's talking about himself there. Yeshua, our high priest, has become the headstone of the corner. This is Yahweh's doing. It is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore, I say to you, the kingdom of Yahweh will be taken from you, Pharisees, Sadducees, Herodians, Essenes, and given to a people of the same habit, but in a foreign land. And they, this house of Yahweh, will bring forth the fruits of this kingdom. So the word Gentile there, it's the Greek word 1484. It means a race or a family, a tribe. One of the speakers today talked about a tribe, specifically a foreign, non-Jewish nation people. Now, notice what else that is written about us. I was listening to caught a bit of one of Pastor's sermon that's playing on the news, I think, or on the radio yesterday. He said, "We are living Psalm 91 with the diseases and people dying from diseases and that type of thing." He said, "We're living Psalm 91. Here's an example of how we are living Psalm 91. Verse 13, "You, house of Yahweh, seventh era, will tread down the lion and the adder." Now, the word tread, it's a Hebrew word, 1869. It means to tread, by implication to walk, as in stringing a bow, treading as in bending. And from the theological workbook of the Old Testament, it says the basic concept behind the ruck has to do with setting foot on territory or objects, sometimes with a sense of trampling them. The concept of marching is likely seen in Psalm 91:13. It refers to treading or trampling the lion and the cobra. So who is the lion? Who is the cobra? From the sixth book of Yisrael here, a pastor says about this treading, Revelation 11, verse 2, "The holy city they will trample underfoot 42 moons." He said, this is war, brethren, deep war. It is a deep war. It's a spiritual war. It's a spiritual war that's being fought with the great, between the witness, Yisrael Hawkins, and Pope Francis. It's deep war that's going on, that's going to be taking place. And the warfare is being spoken of here, 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3, "For though we walk, we live in the flesh," you know, we pinch ourselves and it hurts a little bit, "the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in Yahweh for pulling down strongholds," pulling down kingdoms, unrighteous kingdoms, treading down Rome, for example, "demolishing arguments and destroying every high thing that exalts itself against the one who is Yahweh." bringing under control every thought. That's what we need to do. Bring under control every thought, every emotion, every thought into the obedience as the Messiah. Now, Psalm 91 again, verse 13, you will tread upon the lion and the adder. Now, the lion is Yada. Yada, the priesthood that rules in the Vatican City at this time. And who gives Yada the lion his strength? The dragon, Satan. The young lion and the dragon you will trample under feet. Now, the Hebrew word there, trample under feet, is 7429. It means, again, to tread upon, such as a potter, you know, making it into the image of Yahweh. A potter is going to make it until it's right. He doesn't like what he makes, he's going to make it over. He's going to mold it just as Yahweh is doing with us. Trample under feet, primitive root, to tread upon as a potter, walking or abusively or shaping it the way he wants it. And Revelation 13 there, verse 4. And they worship the dragon, Satan, which gave power to the beast, Yada, the lion. And they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him, Yada, the lion? Well, the only one that is able to make war with Yada, the lion, is Yahweh's last day's witness, Yeshua Hawkins, because he has Yahweh's protection. Others who try this are going to be destroyed. From Revelation 11, verse 8 and 9, I'd like to read these also because they refer to the 3.5 years and what occurs when this 3.5 years is over with. And the body of believers, the house of Yahweh, this is from the Book of Yahweh translation of Revelation 11, verse 8. And the book and the body of believers, the house of Yahweh, the one seed of the two witnesses, goes into the streets of that great city. It doesn't say which city. But it's speaking of Rome. Speaking of Rome here. I mean, there's been a lot of work done by the house of Yahweh in Jerusalem in measuring the temple, in pointing out the peaceful solution, teaching the peaceful solution. Yes, there has been a lot of work done in Jerusalem and Israel. But right now, the great treading down is the one city of the two witnesses, the one seed of the two witnesses, goes into the streets of that great city, Rome, which is spiritually called Sodom and Egypt. There it identifies it right there, where also Messiah was sacrificed. And they take out of the people. They're leaving the Catholic Church, Pastor said. They're leaving the religions. And they take out of the people and tribes and tongues and nations into the house of Yahweh, turning them to Yahweh for 3.5 years, because they will not allow this body of believers, of the two witnesses, to be placed in the tomb. And after 3.5 years, you know, at the end of this time period, and after 3.5 years, after 3.5 years, the spirit of Yahweh, of life from Yahweh, entered into them, the two witnesses. Well, the one witness, Yeshua Hawkins, will be changed. Those who are alive and remain will be changed. And Yaakov will be resurrected. And they stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon those who saw them. I would think that those who saw Yaakov come out of the grave would be greatly excited about that. In verse 12, and they heard a great voice from heaven saying to them, come up here, and they ascended up to heaven in a cloud, and their enemies watched them. Now, I'd like to just touch a little bit on the peace process that, you know, is part of this last 3.5 years. Now, when the peace process was, when the Oslo Accords were signed on September 13th, October, it went into effect October 13th of 1993, shortly thereafter this occurred, and it's the Vatican recognizes the State of Israel. December 30th, 1993. Notice that's only 2 months after the Oslo Treaty, peace treaty was signed. 2 months later. Why then? Why this timing? The formal diplomatic relations, this is from Wikipedia, between the two states, the Holy See, the sovereign nation of Vatican City, called the Holy See, and Israel. Holy See in Israel was established in 1993 after the adoption of this document they called the Fundamental Accord by the two states on 30 December 1993. The establishment of full diplomatic relations in 93-94, okay, was a belated political consequence. Notice, they had no choice, except the Vatican had no choice except to do this. It was a belated political consequence of the pastoral approach toward Judaism as reflected in this paper that we heard about earlier, Nuestra Aete. It was also a result of a new political reality which began with the Madrid Conference and later continued with the Oslo peace process, after which the Vatican could no longer ignore the fact that Israel was a state. So they officially recognized the state of Israel, that even the Palestinians had initiated formal relations with. So state number one of the two-state solution recognized by the Vatican in 1993. Now, also, so here, fast forward to June 26th of 2015, what occurred this date in history. The Vatican recognizes the other state in this two-state solution, the state of Palestine. The comprehensive agreement between the Holy See, which is the sovereign nation of Vatican City, and the state of Palestine was signed 26 June 2015. The following recognition of the state of Palestine, following that recognition, Pope Francis proceeded to establish diplomatic relations with that state, and on January 14, 2017, a Palestinian embassy to the Vatican was officially opened. It sounds like Palestine has received a pretty important backing at this point with the recognition of statehood by the one who rules over the kings of the earth. Now, was Israel pleased when the Vatican recognized Palestine as a state? Here's an article written by Reuters, and it says, the Vatican recognizes Palestine as a state, angering Israel. Why? For the same reason that the moving the United States Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem angered Palestine, because it removed one of the negotiating points, one of their sacred cows, if you would, that they were negotiating with each other about. So it angered Israel. The Vatican signed its first treaty with the state of Palestine on Friday, calling for courageous decisions to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and backing a two-state solution. The treaty, which made official the Vatican's de facto recognition of Palestine since 2012 was right around the time when the peace negotiations of the Quartet broke down. They became ineffective after that time. It didn't destroy the Quartet by any means, no. But their efforts to bring peace to Israel and Palestine, that broke down in 2012. History will show. So what occurred? Well, the Vatican picked up the pace and they said, we're going to recognize Palestine. We're going to, and that's what occurred. The treaty was made official the Vatican's de facto recognition of Palestine since 2012, angered Israel, which called it a hasty step that damages the prospects for advancing a peace agreement. Same thing the Palestinians are saying today about the embassy move to Jerusalem. Now, this is a performance. This is the roadmap. This is an excerpt from the roadmap that the Quartet authored, published, was trying to bring come to pass. A performance-based roadmap to a permanent two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And these are excerpts from this roadmap. The following is a performance-based and goal-driven roadmap with clear phases, timelines, under the auspices of the Quartet. The destination of the final and comprehensive settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict by 2005. Well, we all know that didn't occur. That didn't occur, but they're working on it right now. But continuing here, a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict will only be achieved through an end of violence and terrorism. And has that stopped? Has the violence stopped? Absolutely not. It's escalating. So this roadmap continues here to a permanent two-state solution. It says a settlement negotiated between the parties will result in the emergence of an independent and democratic viable Palestinian state. Well, you know, when the leader of the kings of the earth proclaims that Palestine is a state, that's pretty important. That's something that's been accomplished. Now we can move on. So that's already been done in that respect. What they're negotiating for now is financial benefits, boundaries, that type of thing. They're working out the details at this time in this peace process that's going on. An independent, democratic, and viable Palestinian state living side by side in peace and security with Israel and its neighbors. So, that's 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. But concerning the times and the seasons, brothers and sisters and children, you have no need that I should write to you, the Apostle Shaul said. He said, for you yourselves know perfectly that the day of Yahweh so comes as a thief in the night. It's going to come unexpectedly. It's not going to be, there's not going to be an announcement in the newspaper or on any of the major broadcasts. I mean, in fact, when we see the news last week, that was phenomenal. This change in the demise of the petrodollar, it's going to bring ruination to the United States of America financially. That will eventually lead to that. And what's the end result of all this? It's war. It's war. They're going to war. We know they're going to war. For you yourselves know perfectly well that the day of Yahweh so comes as a thief in the night. It's going to be a surprise. We know it's coming, but when it comes, it's going to probably surprise us too, although we're getting mentally prepared for it with the news that we see here and the teachings we learn. For when they say peace, true peace, then sudden destruction comes. I don't think you're going to have to wait for it very long. You know, after they proclaim peace, true peace, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape. So there is this great showdown that's going on in the world today between Yahweh's last day's witness, the voice, the voice of the seventh Malach, and we're all part of this, brothers and sisters. Our job is to hold up his hands, to do our jobs, to make everything go smoothly as much as possible, right? Make his job easy, to make him look forward to rising up early in the morning and with a smile on his face, knowing that there aren't any problems to solve, and he's just going to go about his writing and everything's going to be perfect. Well, it probably won't be quite that simple, but close. But we have a part in helping him with this great showdown that's going on with the son of perdition, Pope Francis, in these last days. And as part of this showdown, the House of Yahweh is treading down the lion, the Vatican, with the teachings that are coming forth here, with the letters, with the blogs, the information that's being published on the internet, the books, the Yahweh.com, the broadcasts that are going out to all the world. First time in history that's possible, that this information can go to the remotest corners of the earth. The House of Yahweh is treading down the lion, the Vatican, and the serpent, Satan, who gives power to the Vatican, with the voice of the seventh Malach, Yisrael Hawkins, exposing the holy city, Rome, the city that had a plan from the beginning to replace Jerusalem as the so-called holy city. The son of perdition, Pope Francis, has been revealed, and he sits in the temple of Yahweh you know, until his new quarters are built in Jerusalem, he's got it pretty nice with the paintings on the ceiling and everything, and his chapel and all that with the altar on one end. And so he sits in the temple of Yahweh, proclaiming that he's the mighty one. The Catholic Church teaches that the Pope is Yeshua's replacement. You know, the mighty God that here in the earth. So what it says here, he's proclaiming that. It's just part of their doctrine. And this last part here, the two states, Israel and Palestine, have been officially recognized by the Holy See. That's a big step. You can take that off the table. Has been official. All the details haven't been worked out. No, that's what they're working on now. Have been officially recognized by the Holy See, thus fulfilling part of the roadmap to the permanent two-state solution as authored by the Quartet. And the last slide here this morning, 2 Kefa chapter 3 verse 10, but the day of Yahweh will come as a thief in the night. I read an article on the internet saying that, you know, if a nuclear attack would come, it would probably come during the night because of the, you know, just the logistics of it. But anyway, the day of Yahweh will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with great noise, and the elements, these God-worshipping elements in the earth today, this whole system, the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. 1 hour burning, burned up. Since all these things will then be dissolved, what manner of persons ought we to be in holy conduct and righteousness? And here's our answer. This is our goal, to set in our subconscious mind, our conscious mind, everything. You must look for and earnestly long for the day of Yahweh, because of which the heavens will be dissolved in fire and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to the promises which we have through the teachings of the house of Yahweh, through Yahweh's inspired prophets of old and Yahshua, look for a new heaven and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. May Yahweh bless your understanding. If you'd all please stand. I'd like to turn the services over for closing prayer.